The Icons of Real Estate Podcast. Are you ready to learn the proven money-making secrets from top-producing icon agents? Ready to skyrocket your business? This podcast is for you. Tune in every week with your host, Tomas Fonseca, and find out how to implement proven strategies to 10 times your business, from $3 million to $30 million in just 12 months. Brought to you by the Masters in Real Estate Marketing, Ardor SEO.
Welcome to the Icons of Real Estate. I'm Tim Calloway. I have a very special guest for you today from sunny California, Gene Trowbridge of the Trowbridge Law Group. Gene works with entrepreneurs to help them focus on what's important to them, raising money for their deals. And he's going to tell us a little bit about some different regulations. And as a matter of fact, he has a book he's going to talk about as well. Gene, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Tim. I'm happy to be here. Icons of Real Estate, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have been called that once or twice.
I believe
it. And I've also been called a legend, and I don't know which is more complimentary, but my hashtag is not retiring. Okay, that's my hashtag.
There you go.
When you throw out legends and icons, you say, boy, that guy's really old. He must be quitting pretty soon.
I love that. I've never really thought about it. Would I rather be a legend? I think legend's thrown around quite a bit. When I think of icon, the term iconic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's a great question.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
It at least sounds good. So, Gene, tell us. Tell us a little bit about your firm and what you do there and how you got started in it. Everybody wants to know, how'd you get started doing that?
Well, I came out of college a long time ago with a business degree, and I went off to sell commercial real estate. And after a while doing that, I ran into some guys I had gone to college with, and we decided to buy an apartment building together. I found an apartment building. I didn't have enough money to buy it myself. So three other people and I got together and we bought our first building. And, Tim, that's how most of my clients start. They find a property that they can't buy by themselves. So anyhow, we put the money together and bought the building. And I kind of like that. I made a decision not to own any property by myself anymore and went on the campaign to be a syndicator. So for about 20 years, then I was a syndicator and I was primarily building self-storage facilities here. I had moved to California and that's what I did. There was a need for that and that was good. And then at some point in time, I decided that the care and maintenance of partners was just overwhelming. My company had gotten relatively large, about 850 to 900 investors. One year I sent out over 1600 K-1s and there were no back office companies to help you with that like there are today. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing, I'm going to have to grow. And I just decided I'd had enough, Tim.
Right.
So, all good decisions are made around the kitchen table. So I went home for lunch one day and sat with my wife and said, I've got 6 or 7 years of this left in me to manage my properties and sell them and all that.
Right.
I think I'll stop raising money and I think I'll go to law school.
Wow.
So at 45, I went to law school. And that's going to be 30 years ago. And so I came out of law school with one design to be a securities attorney.
Right.
I knew that business from the syndication side, and I thought I could help people, mentor people, and help them get in the business because it's a good business.
Yeah.
It just depends upon how long it lasts on you.
Nice. So tell me about today, now we know where you came from, how you evolved into or how you got into the industry. Tell me about today, who is your target client and what are they looking for?
Well, my target client is our real estate syndicators. I do some syndication, the syndication world and the securities laws work on anything you need to raise money from multiple people. But my clientele is primarily real estate. And I would say since 2008, the majority of the offerings are multifamily.
Okay.
And so I'm looking for, quite honestly, I'm looking for people who are getting started. I have a goal that for every, in our company, for every three repeat deals we do a new deal for a new client. And that keeps our, business growing. And that's what I like to do is I like to work with the newer clients. But, you know, I've got a client that I've done 158 deals with.
Wow.
And I've got all sorts of clients who've done one deal and said, this isn't for me. Okay, good. Before you get 100 investors and decide it's not for you.
Syndicating, syndicating can be as exciting as it can be. It can also be much of a very much a grind, you know, and I've worked in REITs back in the early 90s with, you know, with Wall Street firms, and but syndicating by yourself, or whether it's by yourself or you're the syndicator yourself, it's a lot of groundwork. It's a lot of footwork, and you know, it takes people like yourself to keep people in line for sure.
It's much more of a people business than people. They think it's just simply real estate. Well, you can hire a property manager.
Right.
Oftentimes, what you syndicate is a long way away from you. So you're not at the property every day, but you're with your investors every day. So it's really a people business.
Yeah, for sure. So what does that look like as far as you know, before we get into the book, what does it look like when it comes to you looking for new clients? I mean, how do you go about that? And the reason I bring that up is you and I aren't far different in age. And so there was a way I did it in 1990, and there's a way they do it today. And, you know, you were available during those times doing a lot of this. So how has it changed for you, and how are you doing that now?
Well, me specifically, I was raising money, through the broker dealer community.
Right.
I was lucky enough to get some inroads and with stockbrokers. Mm-hmm. And I had what they call a selling group of companies that when I would bring an offering, they would raise the money for me. So my business was really wholesaling to the brokers, telling the brokers this was a good deal. And then they would sell it to the people with whom they have a previous relationship. That doesn't work anymore. You probably understand that from the REIT business, but that doesn't work anymore.
I was one of those brokers. So
today, my clients today are going out and raising money themselves. So what I am trying to do with Jonathan, my law partner, and we have a firm of six people, and we're all geared to do the same thing. Really, number one is to find people who want to buy some real estate that they can't afford. They're going to put a group together, and they've heard of, you know, the question I get a lot of homework calls. So I call them. People want to know what's going on, and they say, you know, Gene, I want to put together 10 people to buy a property, but I don't want it to be a syndication. Bad question. Because it is a syndication.
By definition.
Two or more people is a syndication, right?
Yeah, by definition, it's a syndication.
The question is, I don't really want it to be a security. That's really what they're asking, because they've heard, oh, how complicated that is and expensive and everything. So first of all, I have to set them straight, and then I have to tell them what a security is. And it really comes down to the fact, Tim, as you know, that if they're going to raise some money from a bunch of people and then they're going to manage the money, they're going to have passive investors.
Right.
They're going to be the active person. They're going to manage the money. It's a security. So welcome to... It's a whole new business.
Yeah.
It's something they hadn't thought about. So I'm always looking for the new person. And then once we get a new person, quite honestly, my concern is, are we responsive as a law firm? Do we give them good quality? Do we train them? You know, we're a flat fee law firm. So I don't care how many times you call me or I call you. I want to make sure you understand what's going on so that you're going to be a repeat client. There's a lot of work in getting an offering done for the first time client. We want to make sure that they come back and they become one of those clients that does 20, 30, 40 deals with us.
Right. So what are some of, you know, is these new syndicators, you know, I mean, whether they wanted to be or not, and they go out and find the bodies, the heads, you know, the accredited investors, accredited or non-accredited, maybe some are all of them accredited investors inside the syndicates?
No, actually, you know, I'll just give you a couple of figures.
Okay.
Private placement industry, where you're not, start over. Every security has to be registered with the SEC unless it's exempt. If it's exempt, it's a private placement. Okay. So the SEC keeps track of the private placement business. And during the last 12 months, and they bring this report out in March, during the last 12 months, it was a $2.2 trillion industry. Wow. More money was raised in private placements than was raised in IPOs.
Wow.
On Wall Street during that same period of time. And Tim, you know about this. I'm going to throw a number out here. 506B,
mm-hmm.
where you raise money from people that you know.
Right.
That don't have to qualify. 96% of that $2.2 trillion is raised.
Right.
From people that you know. And really the reason for that is the majority of that money is raised from the broker-dealer community. And they have Rolodexes and databases of people that they know. So there's not any advertising. They're just going right to their list of clients. Well, our clients are a little different. You know, they might have a database of 40, 50 people, but, you know, is that enough?
Yeah.
So we have to talk to them about that. And then we have to get into the discussion of, well, would advertising work for you? Would advertising work to raise money on this deal or to get contacts so you can build your database? And that's a discussion we have. But we still, you know, 7 out of 10 of our deals are 506B, where you're raising money from people that you know. And back to my most prolific client. He does 506Bs. He knows everyone. Mm-hmm. He has made a position that everyone has to be accredited in his offerings. And his database is closed to new people.
Right.
Okay, well, that's exposure. An enviable position to be in.
Yeah, keeps his exposure, you know, in check as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that's strong. So when people call me with the homework calls, they certainly want to know about advertising. How do I get clients in the database? How do I? So that's the number one question. Can I use other people to raise money for me? How do I advertise? And that's all.
Yeah.
It's really never much about the real estate.
Right. It's you know, depending on who you are, what type of person you are, what sphere you have, and, you know, where your haunts are, you know, that's generally the hardest part. You know, I mean, is go out and find the money. They're out there. They're everywhere. But, you know, you pick up the phone and make 600 dials, you'll find them. But that's not how people do it anymore, you know.
No, it's funny. I go to a lot of live conferences,
mm-hmm.
and let's say there's 12 speakers during the 2-day conference. There's one speaker on syndication, and there's 11 on real estate. Well, the syndication part of it is at least half of it.
Yeah.
I don't know why the overbalance is on real estate. I don't know why that is, but anyhow.
I could give you my opinion on that all day, but that'd be a whole nother podcast, Dean.
We'll do another one.
Yeah, right. So, you know, let's talk about it's a whole new business. You know,
okay, gosh. The fourth edition is out.
Ah.
This one is updated for the securities laws were changed in 2020, really, to expand the definition of accredited investors.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the fourth edition. The third edition was all about crowdfunding,
right?
Out of the Jobs Act. But when I wrote the book, Tim, I wrote the book for real estate. I was in a real estate organization called CCIM, and I was teaching commercial real estate to people. And we only taught, it's a big organization. A lot of people take their education. It's really good education. But all we ever taught was one investor and one property.
Right.
And as I talked to my classes, I knew people are out there pooling money for multiple investors. So I thought, well, they need to know what the rules are. because this program wasn't teaching them. So I wrote the book, It's a Whole New Business. And the purpose for that title was to tell them that if you want to be a syndicator, it's not just the real estate business. Raising money from people is the whole new business. And so I wrote that and then a lot of different four editions. So it's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. And this January I went in the studio and it's on Audible. That was kind of interesting. You know, Tim, I've read that book a billion times. I've edited it myself a billion times, but never have I been so bored as trying to read it aloud to myself.
Isn't it funny how you read it in your mind, it's one way. And then once it starts, trickling out, you start thinking, gosh, you know.
No, the Audible book really came alive because I'd get to the end of the paragraph and I'd say, well, let me tell you about this. And that's nice. So it was kind of fun once I got loose. I got loose in it. But, you know, we talk about fiduciary duty. Mm-hmm. Very important. Because you're taking people's money. Real estate brokers rarely take anyone's money. Right. They do their agency contract and they do their work and they get paid.
Right.
But in syndication business, you take people's money. And so I have to talk about fraud and misrepresentation. And then I talk about, do you really want to be in the business? Some war stories and all that. And then I talk about what entities would you use? And then I have a separate chapter on tenants in common, because that's pretty popular today with all the people who want to exchange. And then I talk about securities laws. And then I go through a pretty good good chapter. It was difficult to do it audibly. I go through a chapter where I go through a case study. We talk about capital accounts and basis and with some numbers. Because most people don't understand that. They don't understand what a K-1 is. And what the numbers on a K-1 is. One of the best questions we would get, Tim, is, do my clients get depreciation? Well, technically, I guess. But what they do is they get a share of the tax loss.
Right.
And the tax loss is NOI minus interest minus depreciation. They just don't simply get depreciation. So we have to explain that. And then I talk about some money raising ideas and what's in the offering documents. So it's a pretty good book. It's not going to bore you in depth with too many things. It's going to give you a good background, and certainly by the time you're through with that book, you know to call a syndication attorney, a securities attorney, if you're going to do a deal, and a CPA.
Yeah, you got any of those war stories you want to share now?
Oh, I got a lot of war stories. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I talk to my clients about is one of the mistakes I made when I was a syndicator. And I talk about this all the time. When I was raising money through the broker-dealer community, a lot of people wanted in that environment. A lot of people had offerings and they wanted the reps to sell their offerings. And so I felt I always had to have an offering. If I didn't have an offering, someone else would step in and the rep would like that person better than me and I'd never hear about them again.
Right.
Well, that caused me at one time to bring a product out before it was ready, before my due diligence was complete, whatever. There was a trade show, a financial institute of financial planners trade show. You're familiar with that, that group. And I knew I'd be standing at my booth alongside of other syndicators and I had to have a product. I brought it out and it was an office building we were building and the major tenant was going to be a credit union. Well, as it turns out, they never got their permit.
Wow.
So I had an empty office building. So we figured that out, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't the type of deal that I would like to do. That was the one bad deal, I guess, in my track record. So that's a horror story. I think syndicators that I work with, generally what I'm concerned about is, do they give themselves enough time? While we're talking today, the financing market is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
So I think you need more time to get your loan finalized than you did, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
So I don't like to see 60-day escrows with no ability to extend.
Yeah.
If you're going to do 60 days, let's have 2 15-day extensions. I think that's good. And another thing that I think is important is, and this comes from my background, when I started a deal and I took it to the reps, like you, Tim.
Right.
I had to know how I was going to close that deal. How was I going to buy that property just in case the money raising didn't go as fast as we wanted? And if you're going to put your client in a deal and I have to back out of the deal, well, your client's not going to like that. You're going to get paid anyhow. We're going to give the money back. That's all bad stuff. So sure. In the due diligence process, they always ask me, how are you going to close this deal? So using my own assets, I had to have a plan.
Right.
Okay? It could be lines of credit. It could be whatever it is. And I find people going into deals now where they can't answer that question. What happens if the money raising isn't fast enough? How are you going to close?
Right.
And then I guess the number one question I think an investor should ask, and if they're going to ask this question, Tim, I think the syndicator should know the answer. Tim, I love your deal. I've got the $15,000, the $50,000 to invest in your deal, Tim. But tell me, Tim, what happens if something happens to you?
Oh, well, right.
How about that for a question? So right. My firm has a policy that we won't do a syndication if the managing member is an individual. I don't care if it's an LLC with one member. We won't do that deal.
Multiple partners.
The last 3 years, we've had syndicators die of COVID.
Well, you could get key employee insurance.
Well, you could get insurance. That's what I did. I had a corporation with the board of directors, so that solved my problem. But I also had a big life insurance policy that was paid to the corporation, not to give the investors their money back. That wasn't the issue because the properties were good.
Right.
It was to hire someone to replace me.
Yeah.
But then your offering agreement, your operating agreement has to have some provisions in it for who else can sign.
Yeah.
If you're the only guy who can sign, first of all, the bank's not going to like that.
Right.
So those are the things that I see and I deal with all the time, Tim.
Yeah, that's good advice. That's good advice, good story there. So you mentioned something earlier at the top of the call, and you know, we were in jest when you said it, but never retiring. And I'm not going to make an assumption, but I'm going to say you probably follow a similar philosophy that I do. I don't really want to retire, so to speak, but I want to have freedoms, obviously. But so tell me, other than retirement, what's the next, 2, 3, 4, 5 years look like for you and for your firm?
Well, my wife says I can't retire because I don't have any other interests. And our firm is totally virtual.
Okay.
So we're from Boston to Nashville to San Francisco, totally virtual. Right. So that's beginning to wear on me a little bit. I miss the camaraderie of the six of us getting together. But anyhow, I am about 4 years ago, I made a New Year's resolution, Tim, that I would stop working, that I wouldn't work on Sunday. And then a little later, I said, well, let's make that start Saturday at noon. I won't work on from Saturday at noon. I've never kept that resolution. I mean, you got to work. Okay. And I kind of thrive on that. But as I get a little older, and because of the time slot I'm in on the West Coast,
right,
I try to quit about 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock West Coast time is 6 on the East Coast and 5 in Texas. And anyone who needs me has already found me. And the people in California found me. So I try to quit about 3 o'clock and I run half marathons. I just just did my 38th half marathon since I turned 60.
Congratulations.
In Kauai, and that gets me out every day and do some investments. I hate playing golf, do some exercise. I hate playing golf. I like to run, and then I and my wife has been retired for a number of years, and we need to spend some time together.
Yeah.
And so that's, we had our 50th anniversary this year. We went to Italy. We go to Hawaii every year for 2 weeks. So my goals every year is to spend more time with Kay.
That's great, Gene. Gene, did I just hear you say that you go to Hawaii every 2 weeks?
No, 2 weeks every year.
Oh,
In my mind, yes.
I was thinking, all right, life of Riley here. Wait a minute. I'm moving to California and I'm going to live next door to Gene. No, that's great, though. Congratulations on the 50 years of matrimony as well. So I'm going to, if anybody needs to get in touch, you know, you are virtual, as you said, your whole office. If anybody needs to get in touch with you, how would they find you, Gene?
All right. Well, you could start with my website, TrowbridgeLawGroup.com. That would work. I have a direct phone number, 949-855-8399. It's 949-855-8399. And you can get me, Gene@TrowbridgeLawGroup.com. That's a good email for me. And I got to talk about my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is very expansive. We have a lot of education. My whole business has been built on education-based marketing, Tim. So I'm always teaching. And that, you know, gets me clients. And also on my YouTube channel, I have interviewed 37 of my clients. And I always ask them the same question. How did you get started? What's going to happen in the next 3 years in your business? And what advice do you have for rookies?
Right.
And the most important question is, what advice do you have for rookies? And they all say, this is not a do-it-yourself business. This is not a no money down business. Get yourself a team.
Yeah.
And go forward. And I love it.
That's great advice. Very much so. Gene, thanks so much for being on the show today. Really enjoyed it. I suggest anybody who's looking to, you know, get into syndication or just wants general knowledge, you know, give Gene a shout. More importantly, maybe grab his book online, start there. And it sounds like go to his YouTube channel, and he's got a plethora of teachings on there, right?
And remember, homework calls are free. You want to call me and just ask me, hey, I'm thinking about doing that. How does this all work? Just call me. I'm glad to talk to you.
Good stuff, Gene. Gene, thanks for being on the show. Really enjoyed it. And love to have another conversation at some point and catch up.
Good. Call me when you think we want to do another one. I've got some good specific stuff we can talk about. Thank you, Tim.
All right, Gene. Have a good one.
Bye.